Welcome into the show, everybody. Mark Farzetta here for the Farzee Show, presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. Hope you guys just had a wonderful weekend. Mine was action-packed. Family reunion, just hanging out with my mom's side of the family, the people from Baltimore. They're just lovely. Just had such a wonderful time with them. And the Phillies won 2 of 3 for the Washington Nationals. So there's something. How about the Phillies winning a series? First time since their series victory over the Chicago Cubs, which, by the way, they had the same format against the Cubs as they did the Nationals. Drop game one, panic, and then they win the next two, and all's right with the world. And then they go on a road trip, and they only win 4 games. But anyway, 4-6 on the road trip. Disappointing. I asked the question before the road trip, what was the number? Can they win 6 games? Can they go 500? And they obviously didn't get to that point, but they end on a high note at least. So we'll talk about that series. We'll also talk about Cam Jurgens making the roll over to guard. And just Friday, he released some information came out, that I was unaware of. I did not know that Cam Jurgens had taken snaps at guard last year. Apparently, and Ruben Frank of NBC Sports Philadelphia asked the question, during walkthrough, he would take snaps at guard. He had obviously played center, and I was unaware that during walkthroughs he would take that time to take some reps at the guard position. So we'll have that conversation, or rather, we'll have that conversation, and we'll let you hear what Cam Jurgens had to say about that. And the Miami Heat fight back from 15 down. You know what's funny? In the NBA, people will talk about those big deficits. Oh, they're down 19. They were down 20. And they gave it. It's like, yeah, they were down. They're, you know, one team was up 20, and then the NBA happened, and the other team came roaring back. That just seems to be the nature of the beast, and it was the nature of the beast last night in Game 2 of the NBA Finals, where the Miami Heat fought back from a 15-point deficit to win that game, and even the series at a game apiece. Denver has their 10-game home playoff winning streak snapped. You see Jokic, by the way? See Nikola Jokic go coast to coast for a nice little layup for the Nuggets last night. I mean, he did that. He did everything. He did everything, as he always does. But the coast to coast thing was pretty amazing. So we'll get to that conversation as well. But let's start it off with the Philadelphia Phillies, folks. I don't care that it was the Washington Nationals. And for the people out there that want to talk about the fact that it was the Washington Nationals and they want to play the role of fun police, just step aside, because this is not a conversation for you. I understand this is against the Washington Nationals, so everything I'm about to say is under the thing of it's the Washington Nationals, okay? So I get it. I don't care, though, because the Phillies had consistently beat themselves and allow whoever it was that they were pitching to or playing against, they allowed them to win games. Now, the other team, a lot of instances, they're just better. But in a lot of the instances as well, the Phillies had made mistakes. The Phillies had had bad pitching. The Phillies came up small from in the batter's box as well. And the perfect example of that is, I don't know, Canna for the Mets just absolutely crushing them with 6 RBIs in that 3-game series. 6 of those RBIs coming in 2 of the last games of that 3-game series. So for me, I don't care that it's the Washington Nationals. I just care that they won. And you could talk about get right series. You could talk about moments throughout a season at the end of the year that were the turning points of the year. And that didn't seem like much then, but it was a lot now. Firing Joe Girardi right now. Oh, he's not the one taking at bats. He's not the one pitching. Well, it turned the entire season around last year. And under Rob Thompson, under his guidance, in his atmosphere that he created in the clubhouse with his players, they were able to make it to a World Series, which is pretty impressive. So you never know when that turning point is going to come. It could be something as drastic as firing a manager, or something as simple as, well, you took 2 of 3 from a team that's supposed to be a lot lesser than you. Okay. Well, now they got the Tigers for 3. They get a day off on Thursday, and then they'll be back at it against the LA Dodgers for a weekend series this weekend. So let's get into this game. Again, I don't care that it's the Nationals, and another reason I don't care is because the Phillies did already make some interesting changes. I think this lineup is hideous. I hate this lineup. The ugliest thing. Like, look, the Phillies went to a World Series with Kyle Schwarber at the top of the order, so I'm fine with that. I still don't like it because I think they have a better guy in Bryson Stott, and I don't like Nick Castellanos batting second. I think that's hideous because I think they got a better choice there with Brandon Marsh. And I like Nick Castellanos batting as the cleanup hitter. And who do they have there? They got Trey Turner as their cleanup hitter. Trey Turner, prior to the series, has had one game, four at bats, where he batted cleanup. I don't like it. I don't like taking the guy that's been struggling the most during the season and then putting him in the most money spot in your lineup. Hey, who is the guy that's been least clutch? Let's put him in the spot. Oh, Trey Turner. Okay, cool. Why don't you shuffle him on down there to the most clutch spot in the lineup? Don't like that. Don't like that even a little bit. So with that being said, I find this lineup to be hideous. But if it works, then I'm just going to have to keep on not liking it because it's, if it works, it works. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to this weird game. It's called baseball. Rob Thompson, before the series, talked about just trying to find a way to get runs across the plate. If this is how it's going to happen, if Kyle Schwarber is going to get you 2-3-run home runs in a single game, if Drew Ellis is going to be mashing home runs, and he could have 3 easily in this series. The previous night, Saturday night, he goes out there and he belts one down the left field line that just is outside the foul pole in foul territory. And then yesterday, he belts one down that same left field line. This time, it's just inside the foul pole for a home run. 3-for-3 on the day. Hell of a day by Drew Ellis. Wonderful story there. 27 years old. He's on his third team. He only had 1 major league home run prior to yesterday, and he doubles. He doubles his home run total in his career yesterday with 2 dingers. You'll love to see it. If you're going to get production like that, if you're going to get production like this from Nick Castellanos batting in the 2-hole for you, if you're going to have Bryce Harper hitting like he's been hitting, if you're going to have guys like Bryson Stott hitting down the order and still hitting nonetheless, if you're going to get production from Brandon Marsh, then this is what you got to ride. Kyle Schwarber last year in the leadoff spot was great in terms of getting you instant offense. And he had done it throughout the entire season with 46 home runs, which is great. And I know a lot of us were waiting for this June outburst from Kyle Schwarber, where I don't know how you do that better on June 4th than to get 6 RBIs and 2 home runs in the game. And also sprinkling in a couple of just regular old hits in between. But what you're seeing now is, I think, a Kyle Schwarber that is comfortable in that leadoff spot. There is something about him, something with that mindset of going into the leadoff spot and realizing that you're the guy that's going to set the tone. I know I've mentioned this story before, but I never really understood what a leadoff hitter was thinking as a leadoff hitter until I heard Jimmy Rollins the day Charlie Manuel put Shane Victorino at the top of the spot, at the top of the order, and he put Jimmy Rollins in the 2-hole. Jimmy Rollins said after the game, when they won that game, I think it was against the Mets, and they won that game, and Jimmy Rollins said, yeah, we won the game today, and Shane led the way. Like, that might sound like a real obvious thing, like, oh, he led the way. Yeah, of course, he was a leadoff hitter. But that guy sets the tone, and Kyle Schwarber loves setting the tone. And you'll hear from Rob Thompson after the game talking about Kyle Schwarber's comfort level at that leadoff spot. And Kyle Schwarber said it himself. It's just, if you're in the leadoff spot, all you're trying to do is just get a good at bat. He tends to get good at bats, gets a good pitch to hit, and drives it for a home run, which is certainly what he did yesterday. But Rob Thompson said after the game, and you'll hear from him as well, that Kyle Schwarber, when he bats leadoff, he puts that little fear into the starting pitcher. Like, hey, just so you know, there's no ramp up here, okay? There's a guy that is looking to get you from the get-go. He's not looking to take 10 pitches. He's not even looking to take 6 pitches. He's just looking to mash a baseball. So you better be ready to start that game. And it gets the pitcher. He's thinking about it through warmups. He's thinking about it while he's in the bullpen, getting ready to take the mound. He's thinking about, first guy got to face a Schwarber. It's going to be 1-0 real quick. So it's a little mental game that Rob Thompson was playing. It didn't work the first time this season when he did it. There was a little bit of a drought there from Kyle Schwarber, but this time around, yes, against the Nationals, maybe this is the exact team they needed to face in order to get their courage back, their strength back, their confidence back. But Kyle Schwarber topped that order, I think, did help the Phillies just a little bit. And the proof is in the pudding. I know we can argue about philosophy, but you can't argue about the results. And the results were pretty plentiful in this series. So let me just say, I don't like this lineup, but if it works, it works. And yesterday with Kyle Schwarber, man, it was working. Now, JT Realmuto is another guy. There's three guys that really focused, four guys actually, I really focused on yesterday during the postgame show on the Jacob Media YouTube channel. One was Kyle Schwarber. Nick Cassianos was the other one. JT Realmuto. And that Rangers. Oh, Drew Ellis. Excuse me. Drew Ellis was another one. Talked to you about Schwarber already. Let's talk a little bit about Nick Cassianos and what he was able to do, not just in this series, but in the road trip. When Nick Cassianos started this road trip, he was batting .289 on the season. All right, so his average had finally dipped below 300 and it dipped below 300 consistently, unfortunately. Had to deal with a handful of games with a sub 300 batting average. So what does he do in this series? What does he do in this road trip? He goes 18 for 40 for a 450 on base percentage. Or excuse me, 450 batting average, pardon me. And he goes out there and absolutely mashes, and he gets his average from 289 over the 10-game road trip to 317, folks. Nick Cassianos is back! And he's playing a hell of a left field, I might add, as well. So he's now batting .316 on the season with a .360 on base percentage, .498 slugging percentage. Not too shabby for Nick Cassianos. Things started to look like he was going a little bit in the tank. He gets a multi-home run game in this series as well. Just missed that home run against the Mets that Brandon Nimmo robbed him of, unfortunately. But the power numbers are coming back. The doubles are certainly there. The average is certainly there. All that being said, again, I don't like this lineup. I don't like him batting second. But if it's going to work, then I love this lineup. So Nick Cassianos, hell of a road trip. Albeit the Phillies as a whole only went 4-for-10 or won 4 of the 10 games on the road trip. Nick Cassianos, if he's going to be swinging this bat for a little while here with Kyle Schwarber leading off the way he is, that's obviously a good thing for the Phillies. Bryce Harper did what he does, so that's that. Trey Turner yesterday 0-for-5 on the day, so it's still no good for Trey Turner. Now, Nick Cassianos settling into that spot is great. JT Realmuto is a guy I really want to talk about here, because if this is JT Realmuto starting to turn the tide on his own season, then this is fantastic. Back-to-back multi-hit games, back-to-back games with home runs is fantastic. Yesterday's home run, they got the Phillies on the board, and we'll go through the whole game in a second. But yesterday's home run on the opposite side of the plate just put a great swing on it and went opposite field for the home run to give the Phillies the 1-0 lead. This is such a great thing because I really, and I've said this a lot, but this team with JT Realmuto, a lot of guys can go cold in this lineup, but when JT Realmuto is cold, it just seems like this entire team is in clutch. They don't hit with runners in scoring position. And bottom line is the most important thing, they're not winning. They're not getting good pitching when JT Realmuto is not hitting. It's the weirdest thing. I feel like everything is connected to JT Realmuto's performance. And we don't talk about it enough. We give him all the compliments in the world when it comes to best catcher in baseball. We'll talk about Bryce Harper when he gets red hot and how that can help carry a team. We'll talk about Nick Cassianos or Kyle Schwarber and all these guys carrying a team. The guy we don't talk about is JT Realmuto. We need JT Realmuto in order to have to watch the Phillies consistently have success. We need JT Realmuto to be steady Eddie, man. We just need him. We don't need him to be hitting 10 home runs in a month. We don't need him to be batting .400 in a month. We don't need him to throw out every single base runner, although that's nice. We just need him to be steady Eddie. We need him to not be a problem is basically what I'm saying. And when he plays to the level we know he can play at, that's when you feel like the Phillies are clicking on all cylinders. That's how I feel about it. I don't know how you guys feel about it. But when I see JT Realmuto just play as good as we know he is, not go through spells of 0-for-14 or whatever it might be, when we see him actually just perform at that nice steady level, it feels like this team is doing great things. And yesterday was a good example of that. Helped get the Phillies on the board, helped the Phillies get the win on Saturday as well. So when you get that steady Eddie, you're good to go with JT Realmuto, Don Realmuto. Drew Ellis. I don't know how to explain it. I think it was Corey Simon who put out the stat that this was the first 3-for-3 day with two home runs and two walks for a Philly since Ryan Howard in 2007. Welcome to the club, Drew Ellis. Absolutely clutch for the Phillies yesterday. Also played some great defense as well. Very impressed with what you saw from Drew Ellis in this series over the last two games. And It didn't start well with him getting picked off of first base. But hey, he came around and helped the team over the last couple of games here. So that's great to see. Let's get through some of the play-by-play from yesterday's ball game. First off, second inning, they go up 1-0 with JT Realmuto's home run to right center field. 90-per-hour fastball on the outside corner of the plate, high and outside. He just put a good swing on it, belted it to the opposite field. Next thing you know, you're up 1-0. Going to the bottom of that second inning. This is the other thing. I didn't even mention Ranger Suarez yet. But first inning for Ranger Suarez yesterday, he throws 7 pitches. In the next inning, he throws 25. I don't know if the specific goal was to go deep into counts for the Washington Nationals, but it looked like that's exactly what they were doing. Candelario goes up there, 7-pitch at bat. He ends up fouling out. Garrett goes up there, 7-pitch at bat. He ends up striking out. Smith goes up there with a single. And then Vargas goes up there with a 9-pitch at bat. In total, there were 25 pitches by Ranger Suarez in that second inning, but nothing doing. The Nationals aren't able to score a run. Go into that third inning. Ellis works a walk. Schwarber flies out. Castellanos gets the single. Harper goes up there and pops out to the shortstop. Trey Turner lines out to the center fielder. So you get the leadoff runner on. Couldn't do anything with it, unfortunately. Bottom of the third inning. Adam gets the single. Call ends up flying out to left field. Thomas grounds into the fielder's choice. Garcia gets hit by a pitch, gets negated because he swung at it. And he ends up grounding out to Cody Clemens at first base. A 12-pitch inning for Suarez. Starts to settle in a little bit there. Unfortunately, in the fourth inning, this was a wild inning here. Meneses gets the triple off that little angled wall in left center field at Nationals Park. So he's sitting on third to lead off the inning. You just know that run's going to score. I asked this question. When Meneses leads off that inning, and you know he's going to be sitting there, you get a walk. So you have runners at first and second with nobody out, or first and third with nobody out. Then Garrett hits that ball. And here's where the question comes in. Garrett hits that ball that looks like it's going out of play down the right field line. And PJ, I'll look at you for this. When he hits that ball down the left field line, you have a runner on third base. Garrett hits the ball down the right field line. It's drifting out of play. It starts to come back into foul territory. Castellanos is under it. It drifts into fair territory. Castellanos makes the catch. Then you have Meneses tag from third base. Here's my question. If you're Castellanos and that ball is going to fall into foul territory, do you let it drop and roll the dice that you're able to get the next out? I think it was a 2-strike count at that point. Or do you catch it knowing the run's going to score? Do you catch it? Yeah, That's what I thought. Now, look, again, for those of you who might have missed the game, it was in play, so he had to catch it. If he doesn't catch it, it's a hit. But if it's out of play, if it's in foul territory, I should say, then I was like, if he catches that, it's definitely a run. If he doesn't catch it, maybe you get out of the inning. But then, of course, with karma biting you in the ass the way baseball likes to have, karma bites you in the ass, then it watch like a 2-run home run. Well, in this case, it would have been a 3-run home run. Be the next play. So anyway, run ends up scoring. It's tied 1-1. But don't fear. Don't fear, ladies and gentlemen. Top of the fifth inning, Drew Ellis steps to the plate, belts that ball down the left field line for the home run. You're up 2-1, and the Phillies were just completely in control after that. Going to the bottom of the fifth inning, you have a great diving stop at first base by Cody Clemens. We don't talk enough about how Cody Clemens has been a blessing to this team. As a starter at first base in the field, as a hitter, what he's done as a starter has been fantastic. So that's great to see. Makes a great diving stop. Saved a run without question, so it stays 2-1. After the fifth inning. Sixth inning, Kyle Schwarber hits his first of 2 3-run home runs. And here's what was interesting about that. You get 2 runners on, including Ellis getting a hit. Williams gets taken out, the starting pitcher for the Trevor Williams for the Nationals. Machado comes in, instantly gives up a hanging sinker, a sinker that didn't really sink. And Kyle Schwarber just put a great swing on it, belted it down the right field line into right field stands for a 3-run home run. And then the Phillies, they're up 5-1 after that. They add on some more runs in the seventh inning. Sixth inning. I thought this was interesting. Bottom of the sixth inning, Candelario strikes out. Garrett lines out to right field. Great catch by Castellanos, by the way. Ball almost went over his head, but he recovered, made a great catch. Then Smith grounds out to Bryson Stott at second. Ranger Suarez goes into the dugout, and it looked like he was like high-fiving and shaking hands and bro hugs all around. And I think Ben Davis was talking about the frosted tips that Ranger Suarez got. So, okay. And I was like, is he done? He can't be done. Don't be done. At that point, I think he was at like 84 pitches, maybe. And they decide to bring him back out for the seventh. So Ranger Suarez goes out for the seventh inning. And in the top of the seventh inning, the Phillies tack on some more runs. Brandon Marsh gets the RBI sac fly in a 12-pitch at bat. How about that? And then Drew Ellis gets his second home run of the game with a two-run home run. And now it's 8-1 in favor of the Phillies after the top of the seventh inning. Going to the bottom of the seventh, Vargas grounds out to Cody Clemens at first. Adams gets a single. Call gets a single. You now got runners at first and second with one out. Are you going to get him? Are you going to go get Ranger Suarez? Rob Thompson says, I don't think so. And Ranger Suarez, you know what he does? He gets out of it with a 5-4-3 double play. Seven innings in the book after a bullpen game. Seven innings in the book for Ranger Suarez. Spell in the bullpen of a rough day at the office. He throws 101 pitches, picks up the victory. His first of the season, and that's two starts in a row for Ranger Suarez. 6 2/3 against the Mets, seven innings this time around, where he allows a run or two in those two starts. Great to see scattered seven hits in the ball game. Jake Hoffman came on in relief in the next inning and handled his business to help the Phillies get to that win. Kyle Schwarber also in the ninth inning tacked on some more runs with a three-run home run, made it 11-1, and then Connor Brogdon gave up a two-run home run. Phillies end up, to Vargas, Phillies end up winning the game 11-3. All in all, this is exactly what you wanted to see from the Phillies in this series. I needed to see this from the Phillies in this series. After the game, Rob Thompson addressed the media about how this team was looking post-game.
I mean, that's our goal, is to win series and one day at a time. But, you know, and there are going to be times when you go into somebody's ballpark and get swept, but then you got to bounce back. So that's huge for us. But that's the way this group is. I said it all last year. They're resilient. They fight. They have a short memory, and they just keep going.
That in baseball, in every sport, in almost every walk of life, you have to have that short memory. I don't know what it is about baseball. Maybe because it's such an unbelievably taxing mental game with 162 games, rarely a day off. And when you're playing bad, it feels like you just can't get out of it. And sometimes the littlest thing will happen, and all of a sudden you've turned things around. Your confidence starts to grow. You get swept by the Mets, but then you go and you win two big games against the Nationals to get at least right back on the winning track before coming home for a six-game homestand. Then you got to go out again for a eight-game homestand, I believe, coming up. Seven-game homestand. So you have a lot going on here with the Phillies. This is what I will hopefully look back on and just refer to it as a get-right series for the Phillies. I hope that this is just the momentum that they build. I hope this is just the beginning of the momentum that they build. Now, as far as Kyle Schwarber goes at the top of the order, this is a mental game, really. And you look at his last two games here. He obviously has the big game yesterday with the six runs batted in, the two home runs. The day before that, he got a single, which seems like it's been forever. But if he's going to be more comfortable at the top of that order, leading the way, as they say, well, this is what you got to do. Here's Rob Thompson on that decision.
Based on the way these last couple games have gone?
Yeah, I mean, based on the history, it should be consistent. But, you know, you never know. But I just like the fact that he walks, he gets on base at a fairly good rate, and he hits homers. And he, when he walks the plate in the first inning, that pitcher that's starting the game has to be aware and alive. So, you know, and he's comfortable there. So,
I love the idea of making that pitcher think about it. Of all the things, and look, last year it's hard to argue with a good on-base percentage. Last year it's hard to argue with 46 home runs. And it's also hard to argue with the idea that the Phillies are making the playoffs and then making it to a World Series. It's hard to argue Kyle Schwarber as a leadoff hitter is a good idea. The other thing, or as a bad idea, but the other part of it is it does highlight for me two things. One, that Bryson Stott is having one hell of a year, and I think he has earned that leadoff spot. And I'd love having him at the leadoff spot, but if they're not winning with him there, then You got to do whatever you got to do to win. The other thing that it highlights is Trey Turner just having such a terrible season. I refuse to believe that this is Trey Turner now. I was too excited for the signing. It was a great signing. It looks terrible right now. 0-for-5 yesterday? There is no way. Like, you could justify Kyle Schwarber. All you have to do to justify Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot is World Series. That's all. It's two words. You made it through the World Series last year with Kyle Schwarber as your leadoff hitter. That's all you have to say. Why would you have a World Series? Oh, I have no counterpoint. Other than, we dealt with last year. You know what I mean? Trey Turner batting as terribly and having the at-bats as terrible as he has had this season. And then looking at his entire career, I can't just say, no, well, this is Trey Turner now. He's a 240 hitter. Like, I can't. He's a 275 on base percentage guy. I can't. No, that doesn't make any sense. And he's got a better track record than Nick Castellanos as far as like what he can do as a hitter, what he has done throughout his entire career, stealing bases, getting on base, how he's played in the field. I refuse to believe that this is going to be a Nick Castellanos year for Trey Turner. Oh, Nick Castellanos last year had to get used to a new team, new teammates, new city, all this stuff, new home, moving into Ben Simmons' house. Mistake. All that. All the excuses wrote out for Nick Castellanos. I refuse to look across the way at Trey Turner and say, oh, this is just as Nick Castellanos here. He's just going to be terrible all year. I still feel like, and it's the same feeling I had when I told you guys last year that the Phillies were going to fire Joe Girardi and they were going to go on a run. And that happened. And that same gut is telling me this Phillies team is going to look at Trey Turner, and we're going to look at Trey Turner for one point in this season. We're going to go, damn, that was worth it. Damn, that was worth it. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. None of us like it right now. But soon. Maybe soon is overselling. At some point this season, we are going to look at Trey Turner, and we're going to go, and I'm telling you this on a day where he just went 0-for-5. There's going to be a day. We look at Trey Turner, and we go, damn, we got Trey Turner. This is great. Stolen bases, home runs, doubles, triples. Oh, my. Mark my words. We're going to have a long stretch in the not-too-distant future where Trey Turner looks like he's worth every bit of $300 million that the Phillies signed him to this past offseason. I'm telling you. I'm just telling you is all. By the way, just to get you the now that I said all that, let me get you the full blown numbers here with Trey Turner. I know I was in the ballpark, no pun intended, but just to get you. Yeah. OK. Did I say 340? OK, maybe that was optimistic. 330 or 232. I think I said 240. 232 on the season now after the 0-for-5 day with a 276 on base percentage. That's Trey Turner right now. And I'm telling you, on this day, with Trey Turner 0-for-5, 232 batting average, 276 on base percentage, and a 366 slugging percentage, I'm telling you, we are still at some point this season really going to love that signing for an extended period of time where Trey Turner figures it out. I don't know if Rob Thompson understood. Who was it yesterday? Somebody was tweeting me yesterday that he wants Trey Turner to be hypnotized. Remember when you were an all-star? Remember when you hit 300? Go back to that. Enrico Palazzo. Anyway, Phillies start that series with the Tigers today. 6:40 start time. I got to tell you, I love the 6:40 start time. Ah, it's a beautiful thing. Phillies five games under 500, 27-32. 6:40 start time tonight. Aaron Nola gets the start against the lefty Joe Wentz. Joey Wentz gets the start for the Tigers. I wish I had somebody a bold prediction for Aaron Nola, but it seems like whenever he's bad, he's bad. Whenever he's having a bad year, oh, it's bad. He might have like one or two good starts every 2 months to make you go, maybe this is it, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to fall into that trap. I'm not going to do that again. Aaron Nola, we went over it before. Looking at some of his numbers recently, in his last couple of starts, there were a couple of things there that you looked at and you went, oh, all right, seven innings against the Cubs, 2 runs. Maybe he's figured it out. His last 5 starts, 2 runs against Toronto, 4 runs against Colorado, 2 runs against Chicago, 9 runs in total against the Braves and Mets. Division rivals, of course. The bad part is, well, the bad part's the numbers, but the real bad part is after the game when they ask him about his starts, Aaron Nola's just like, I don't know what to tell you. Cutter doesn't cut. Knuckle curve isn't knuckle curving. Fastball, that velocity's actually not that bad compared to how it was earlier in the season. But when it comes to location, hey, man, 94 miles per hour is fine for Aaron Nola, but if it's 94 with no life, that ball is tattooed. So 6:40 start time. Aaron Nola looks for his first of many good starts in a row. That's what he'll do. So that's the Phillies, ladies and gentlemen, 5 games under .500. The Braves got a grand slam yesterday, and they won their ball game against the, I think it was the Diamondbacks. So good for the Braves. They're just continuing to do brave things. The Mets lost. That was good. I caught the highlights of that. And I don't know what it is about watching celebrities of other teams look disappointed, but John Stewart was in the crowd. And I like John Stewart. But watching him be pissed off that the Mets lost was a nice thing. So the Mets lost. At least there's that. Let's move in right now to Cam Jurgens. Despite what some people may think, and I said this at the time, so people that want to throw this in my face, you back off. I wanted N'Kobe Dean in the second round. Turns out the entire NFL apparently knew more than me because he didn't get drafted for another round later. Still another round later. But Cam Jurgens was taken in the second round, and we know the story. Came out in the preseason, very similar style to Jason Kelce, without question, very similar style. And now with the departure of Isaac Seumalo, Cam Jurgens, it looks like he's going to be your starting right guard. The last time we talked about this was Jason Kelce about 2 weeks ago, talking about how nobody's going to replace Isaac Seumalo. And he went on to not as much as I thought he would, but he did go on to talk about Cam Jurgens' ability. I wouldn't say he was singing the praises of Cam Jurgens. I felt like that speech from Jason Kelce in his mind was more meant to honor the memory of his former teammate, now member of the Steelers, in Isaac Seumalo, that nobody can come in and fill those shoes. Nobody can replace Isaac. He said someone's going to be playing that position, and that person most likely is going to be Cam Jurgens. Now, Dickerson came in and filled in the left guard position last year very well. Now it's going to be Cam Jurgens' turn to fill in a guard position as a rookie. And I find it really hard with this offensive line, with Jason Kelce as your center, with Jeff Stoutland as your coach, I find it very hard to doubt anybody that's coming in to fill a major role, especially on the offensive line. You can doubt that about some other positions, but right now I don't think you can doubt that about the offensive line. So Cam Jurgens coming in to play right guard is a very interesting thing because he is touted as the center of the future, and now he's going to get an opportunity to play the right guard position. Friday, after OTAs, he took to the podium to talk about making that transition. And I think this is him talking about what it's been like for him moving from center to guard on this O-line.
I mean, it's not as challenging as going from tight end to center. So that helps, but it's been fun. I mean, it's super helpful having Kelce next to me, telling me how things are supposed to be done. And I mean, watching Landon do it. And then, I mean, Isaac was a pro at it last year. So being able to just watch film every day, what those guys do and how Isaac handled himself and how he handled, just different, all of his footwork. It's, you know, you don't have to have the same footwork for every block, and people do things differently. So it's cool getting to see that. I mean, I think I can still, you know, go in and still be an athlete at right guard like I can be at center.
Now, it's not necessarily Lane Johnson going from what was his trajectory? Was it quarterback to tight end, then to tackle, I believe is how it went. And for a tight end to move to a tackle, it's a little easier. But yeah, Cam Jurgens, for those that didn't know, when he was at Wisconsin, he was a tight end his freshman year. I believe the story goes he broke his foot, and then he didn't play the rest of the year. And when he came back, they're like, "Hey, you're gonna be on the O-line, and then you're gonna play center." Okay, so that's his story. But it's got to be ridiculously helpful. I know sometimes we might make too big a deal out of like veteran leadership or anything like that, but when it's Jason Kelce, a future Hall of Famer, a guy who's played in two Super Bowls, a guy that's won a Super Bowl, oh, and it's Jeff Stoutland as your coach as well. Oh, and on the other side of you, got Lane Johnson. I got to imagine it's easier. When I was working with Trey, one of the things that really stuck out in my mind is from one of the things he would tell me about the offensive line is how when you have a guy like Cam Jurgens, or you have a guy that is used to playing the center position, it's a lot easier to go to guard as it would be, you know, as opposed to like tackle or anything like that. But one of the things that guys have trouble with is like when you're the center, you're the captain of the offensive line. You're calling signals, you're calling coverages and all that stuff. There's a lot to worry about. And a lot of times you can feel like even though you're in the middle, you're on your own island. When you move to the guard spot, you got to know that you have guys on your right and left that are holding down the fort. And you know that you have two guys doing that here. But at the same time, more so than the center position where you are right in the middle of things, you could feel like you're in a little bit of a phone booth when you're playing the guard position. And that could be a little tight for a guy like Cam Jurgens. I don't think that's going to be a problem here. I've been told that that can be a problem. And it makes more sense if a tackle is moving to guard, obviously, where you really feel like you're in that phone booth. But I don't think there's going to be a problem for Cam Jurgens. And one of the reasons I don't think there's going to be a problem is because he's got experience doing this before. I didn't realize this, but Cam Jurgens last year during walkthroughs would take snaps at the guard position. I was not aware of that. Very smart on his part. Jeff Statland talked about it last year, according to Ruben Frank. And here's Cam Jurgens talking about his already having some familiarity with the guard position at the NFL level.
It does help. I mean, I think it helped a lot just for center. Because you don't want to just memorize your calls and do everything. Like you want to know the scheme in and out. You know, we want to know where the ball is supposed to hit, what calls should be here, and you know if defense is different. You know, it's not just like this call goes to that call. It should be like, well, I want the ball to hit there. I know the scheme. So when you're at guard, then it's like you get a little more perspective of what everybody else is doing around you, and you're learning the scheme instead of memorization. So I think that aspect, it's like it helps you learn the offense a lot better.
The scheme instead of memorization. To me, when I hear that, what I'm hearing from him is a guy that's talking about reacting and not a guy that is thinking. You're just memorizing it so that you can react to it. And I think that is so unbelievably important for a young player to get past that thinking part. If it's memorized, it's committed to memory, and it just becomes muscle memory at that point, I think that is exactly what you need to do as a young player going forward. And I think that's what Cam Jurgens is doing. Let me tell you right now about the great people at Steven Singer. Steven Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. For over 40 years, Steven's been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people fall in love and get engaged. Steven Singer Jewelers is home of the perfect price. Now, what's the perfect price? The perfect price is there to make you feel comfortable, to make you feel relaxed. Not like you're about to make some huge purchase, but you're going to get taken care of. You don't have to worry about negotiating or haggling or anything like that at Steven Singer Jewelers. Steven Singer Jewelers, one place, one price, the perfect price online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Let me tell you about the great people at Freestone Farm CBD, FreestoneFarmCBD.com. You'll love their tropical-tasting Bayox that clocks in at a chart-topping 24.1%. And Super CBD, which is half Hindu, Kush, and 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So try Freestone Farm CBD at FreestoneFarmCBD.com. Use promo code Farzi for 20% off. How about Manscaped, the leader in below-the-waist grooming? Join 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Go to Manscaped.com. Use promo code Farzi for 20% off and free shipping at Manscaped.com. Their Platinum Package 4.0 is their best hygiene bundle yet. It includes their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, as well as their Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. And they come with skin-safe technology that helps you reduce the risk of nicks, so you can manscape with confidence and comfort. So try Manscaped.com and use promo code Farzi for 20% off and free shipping. How about PHL Sports Nation, Philadelphia Sports Nation, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's PHLSportsNation.com. Let's get to the chat check and see how you beautiful people are doing on this fine morning. Sean Gillespie, good morning. Just a tip. Ah, pots and pans. My man, pots and pans. What's going on? April, good morning. Dan Schwartz, morning. big game against Wentz tonight. Joey Wentz, no relation. April, I don't care if they were playing the Little Sisters of the Poor. I'm just glad to see a W. April, you and I are on the same wavelength. Sean Kilrain, how about Schwarber and the kid Ellis? Oh, that reminds me. Hold on. How dare I? Corey Simon of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Corey Simon caught up with Drew Ellis after the game last night. Here is that clip from Drew Ellis talking about his success.
It's awesome. Just being able to put a Big League uniform on again, it's really special. So I can't thank the people who supported me enough to get to this position. So just keep riding it out and having fun.
And just how important is it for you to like come to a new organization, new team, and just be able to have a game like this right away?
Yeah, it's, you know, having a game like this is always good. But the guys have been great here so far. They've really welcomed me in. So we've got a really good team here, and I would expect us to win a lot of ball games.
There you go. I was sitting on a sofa a month ago. Oh, where am I going? I'm going to go to Philadelphia. Well, I'm going to go to Lehigh Valley first. Where's Lehigh Valley? Is that a bat? Where is it? Okay. And now he's here hitting dingers, baby. Hitting dingers. That's courtesy of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Couldn't be happier for that guy. How about Schwarber and the kid Ellis? Yes, love him, Sean Kilrain. Thank you. Good morning to you. Dan Schwartz, April. They were playing the Sisters of the Poor. Other teams view the Phillies like we view the Nationals. See, that's what I'm saying. A lot of times we'll talk about looking at other teams like, oh, well, at least we got the Giants on our schedule, or the New York Giants, whoever it might be, the Washington Commanders. At least we got Commanders on the schedule. You know? You never want to be the team that other teams are looking forward to playing. The Nationals, to me, are a team that other teams are looking forward to playing. The Phillies, I think at times, the Mets were looking forward to playing them. The Braves were looking forward to playing. At least they swept the split with the Braves. So for me, you never want to be that team that everyone else is looking forward to playing. The Phillies with this lineup, though, I know this is going to sound like such a homer, but I just feel like this lineup is going to break out at any moment. And look, 11 runs yesterday against the Nationals is great. Do it again against the Tigers. Do it again against the Dodgers. But the lack of consistency, I think, has other teams looking forward to, well, I could get them on a bad night. Could get them on a bad date. Next thing you know, I can have 13, 15 strikeouts, whatever it might be. And that is certainly the case with the Phillies, unfortunately. But, like I said, I don't care that it was the Nationals. You needed the get-right series, and hopefully this is their get-right series. Dan Schwartz, we need more info on Joey Wentz. Like, when he gets stressed, does he grow zits all over his neck? It's probably the scouting report. Was that Woogie? I think it was. Let's do one thing here real quick with you, because I want to give you more. You know what, if the audience is asking for more information, by golly, I'm gonna give you more information. Born in Kansas, which is not North Dakota, which, by the way, Carson Wentz is from, I believe, North Carolina originally. I think he was born in North Carolina and then moved to the North Dakota area, North Dakota state. Was selected by the Braves in the 40th overall pick in the 2016 MLB draft, and traded him to the Tigers in 2019. There you go. He made his MLB debut last year. He is 25 years young. He'll be 26 in October. That's it. That's all I got for you. There you go. Thank you, Wikipedia. Where did he get his education? Did he have an education? Did he go to school and learn things? Does not appear so. Yeah. Shawnee Mission East High School in Prairie Village, Kansas. He was a Sunflower League Player of the Year in 2015 and 16. Junior and senior years. Good for him. That's nice. So there you go. All right, that's all the information you need. And it does not say anything about being related to Carson Wentz. So there you go. Cody Clemens had a nice play at first base, somewhat of a bright spot. Cody Clemens has been great. Definitely exceeding my expectations. And this Tigers series, look for a lot of dingers from Cody Clemens getting revenge on his old squad. Matt Vierling out there. What's Matt Vierling got going on? Meant to look him up as well. But yeah, got a lot going on here against this Tigers team. They're 26-31 on the season. And Matt Vierling, people were talking about Matt Vierling like he was having some kind of great year. 241 batting average, 297 on base percentage, four home runs, playing predominantly right field. Oh, he's on the 10-day injured list, so we won't be seeing Matt Vierling. So that's even more reason for Cody Clemens to go off. You guys not even playing. Anyway, Dan Schwartz, try to do too much, throw a prayer up. It's intercepted, hit for a home run. Phillies did have the second worst differential in the National League before yesterday. Thank you, Dan. Sean Kilrain, do you go with the four starters instead of five? That's been our kryptonite. Thoughts? Sean Kilrain, here's where I'm at. Get back to stretching out Strom, please. Please get back to stretching him out to give you like five innings. I hate bullpen games. I despise bullpen games. Get Strom stretched out again. Have him as a starter. Solve the problem. Wait, while you're waiting for McGarry to get ready, Strom. Professor Dutch, what's up? Let's get into the chat check. Professor Dutch, I'd like to see Topper get excited and animated just once. Just once! Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world where stereotypes are condemned. We live in a world where prejudice is condemned. And that's what oftentimes stereotypes lead to, is prejudice. And it's just not fair. It's not right. But if there is anything that I can say is an accurate stereotype, if you're waiting for a Canadian to get really excited, then you're going to be waiting a very, very long time. You're going to be waiting for the Toronto Maple Leafs to win a Stanley Cup. And that's going to be a minute. Okay. That's when you're going to see a Canadian excited. I'm just letting you know, it's going to take a lot. It's either that or like Joey Bautista years ago with his epic bat flip in the playoffs. That's the only times I really see Canadians excited. And of course, Joe Carter's home run. But we don't need to go there. It's not in Rob Thompson's MO. And to me, I think that makes him a good manager. To me, it does give me confidence that he'll get the Phillies back to the playoffs. He is last year, and I've been saying that this is the first time he's really faced adversity, and it has, as the everyday manager without the interim tag. This is the first time he's faced it. Last year, when the Phillies were hitting a little bit of a rut before the playoffs, I know we all talk about how hot they got. They were pretty lukewarm going into the playoffs. They weren't the hottest team in baseball. And during that stretch, Rob Thompson was still right here, man. He's like, I know. We're going to get confident. We're going to play. We're going to get in the playoffs. And this team is going to make it to the playoffs. This team is going to make it to the playoffs. He was that type of, and I maybe it's because I'm a Northeast corridor United States guy. And, you know, Boston, New York, and Philly have very similar passion streaks. I am high and low, man. There's no middle ground right here. There's none of this.
For the people on the podcast, I was significantly high with my left hand, low with the left hand, and then the middle with the left hand. I'm never middle. I'm never this.
Rob Thompson's always right here. Now, Brett Brown used to call it firing bullets, and you only have so many bullets as a head coach, so you can't yell and scream. And there was that series against the Nets from 3 years ago where they went in and they were terrible, and then Brett Brown started just destroying the team in the locker room. And Jimmy Butler even said, yeah, coach got after it. Coach got after it. And it was like a respect thing. I was like, wow, Jimmy Butler respects his head coach. How about that? And then the James Butler thing happened, whatever. Rob Thompson is not that guy. I don't think Rob Thompson has it in him to really be that animated. You've seen it once or twice with arguing with the umpire, but not much. I've wondered if you needed that kind of kick in the ass from your manager to kind of get everybody's attention again. I don't know if it's happened. Hopefully the Phillies won't need it again as the season goes on. But I think when you're the person that is always right in the middle, that is always even keeled, that always has that right temperament, in those moments, those few moments where you do, for lack of a better term, fly off the handle, that really gets people's attention. If you're around people that are yelling and screaming a lot and they're pissed off all the time, then it's like the boy who cried wolf, right? The boy who cried wolf. It's like, what, dude? Okay, you're just yelling again for the sake of yelling. But when you really get pissed off and that grabs people's attention, oh, my God. That has a lot of power. So I think Rob Thompson is a guy that really picks his spots. Because I can't imagine being in that job and not getting pissed off from time to time. And when you pick your spots, I think that really grabs people's attention. But I tell you all that, Professor Dutch, just to tell you, yeah, I'd like to see him animated every once in a while as well. Sean Kilbride, Trey Turner is having somewhat of a Nick Castellanos season in his first season, doing too much and trying too hard to do things. Sean, it's very possible, but I refuse to believe that we're going to go through pretty much an entire year of that. Sean Kira, damn, Farzi, you must have been thinking what I'm thinking. I think we were on the same page there. Mihai Sanchez, at this point, I'd rather left Stott at shortstop and kept Nick Maton at second. Not a $300 million investment. What? People, man, it's a long contract. It's a long, wow. Now, Nick Maton is healthy. And the 26-year-old Maton is hitting 162 on the season with five dingers. He's got five dingers. How about that? Yeah, no, I'd still rather have Trey Turner. Nola needs the hypnotist. Sean, I agree. April, did you listen to the Kelsey interview on Greenlight? I did not. It is definitely on the list. My podcast listening is taking a hit. Lil Toots was going to school in the city still. So we were driving her what ended up being like 2 hours in the car because Lincoln Drive, man, whoo, baby, that became my new, 76. Oh, God, that became my new Schuylkill. I was listening to the podcast a lot. Smartless, Fly on a Wall, Green Light, New Heights. I was listening to those, and now I just, now I mow the lawn and I listen to the podcast. I got to mow the lawn either today or tomorrow. So maybe I'll give it a listen then. But yeah, I'll have to. April. Ew, don't put that juju on North Carolina. The home state. The home state of Carson Wentz. Sean Gillespie, those Canadians were excited during the Raptors-Sixers playoff run. That's a good point. Canucks cheering on players in. Good point. Fair enough. Crazy. Been at work 3 hours already. Dead tired. See you after tonight's win. Crazy. Thank you, brother. Hang in there, man. Hang in there. Travis, what's going on, Travis? Someone said Smitty becomes a father means he gets swole. Is it true for all first-time fathers? Huh. Fat and happy? You definitely put on your winter coat. I'll say that. But swole as in like swole Batman, like built, like jacked. That didn't work for me, unfortunately. There you go, April. Listen at 1.2. Get through the list easier. Okay. I will. Let's do it. Thanks everybody in the chat. You guys are great as per usual. As I mentioned, Phillies are back at it tonight. 6:40 start time against the Tigers. They open up that 3-game series with the Tigers. Aaron Nola will be on the hill for the Phillies. Joey Wentz will be on the hill for the Detroit Tigers tonight. Yeah, I got to everything I wanted to get to there. NBA Finals. I wanted to tell you this. Detroit Tigers, 3-game series, then a 3-game series with the Dodgers, so 6-game homestand, and then 4 against the Arizona Diamondbacks in Arizona, and then 3 in Oakland for that 7-game road trip. And then the Phillies are back home for a 6-game series homestand against the Braves and the Mets. Well, the All-Star game's like, feels like it's right around the corner. Holy Lord. Yeah, a little more than a month away, man. A little more than a month. Yeah, a little more than a month away. Well, NBA Finals. The Miami Heat come back and tie the series at a game apiece with an incredible performance by Matt Strus. Max Strus was absolutely incredible in that game last night. Nikola Jokic was incredible as per usual, but to no avail this time around. 111-108 win for the Heat. Now, a lot of people are talking about this last play, so the last sequence where the Nuggets are dribbled up the court. They're down 3. They decide to not call a timeout with about 8 seconds left. Instead, what happened was Jamal Murray was dribbled around the top of the key. They tried to set a screen for him. On the screen, the Nuggets switch off, and Jimmy Butler ends up on Jamal Murray. That is not who you want. If you're looking to shoot a game-winning shot or game-tying shot, you don't want Jimmy Butler on you. But that's the way it played out. Jimmy Butler gets a hand in the face of Jamal Murray. He misses the 3 that would have tied things up. And the Heat end up walking away with the victory. Now, the crazy thing about this game is, and I talked about the runs earlier in the game, the Nuggets in this game were up by as much as 15. The Heat ended up taking control as well, going up by as much as 12. The Nuggets would end up rounding things out well. But when push came to shove, holy Lord. Strus stepped up there with 14 points, was 4 of 10 from beyond the arc. Gabe Vincent was 4 for 6 from beyond the arc for 23 points to lead the Miami Heat in the game. And Jokic, as you would assume, was the guy that was the most consistent for the Nuggets with 41 points, 11 rebounds, just 4 assists. So no triple-double for him. But yeah, so that series now shifts to Miami for game 3 with things knotted up. The 44-38 Miami Heat knotted up in the NBA Finals against the 53-29 Denver Nuggets. It's a fun game. It's a fun game. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Look forward to having another good time with you guys and hopefully talking about another Phillies victory. Jim Heider produced the program. Did a wonderful job as per usual. My name is Mark Farzetta. This is the Farzi Show presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. And tonight, after the Phillies hopefully get that win on the Jacob Media YouTube channel for the Phillies post-game show. See you guys then. Bye.